You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's AL East beat reporters. We're talking about the Gerardo Parra acquisition, Chris Tillman and the rotation, and Jonathan Scope when we talk Baltimore Orioles. Talk Red Sox, we're taking a look at Henry Owens and Brian Johnson, Rick Porcello, and talking some front office stuff. We'll be taking a look at Michael Pineda's injury and Luis Severino's future when we talk New York Yankees. We talk Rays, we'll be checking in on Richie Schaefer, Daniel Nava, and Matt Moore. And when we talk Blue Jays, you better believe we'll be talking David Price, as well as Ben Revere and Dave Dombrowski. Bill, the Rays are always interesting, and they're always sort of doing that tinkering around the edge of the roster. But in the last week or so, they brought in a couple of pieces that might be rather interesting. First of all, they called up prospect Richie Schaefer, who kind of emerged recently after not really maybe reaching expectations early in his minor league career, really came into some power this year, though. What does Schaefer bring to this offense while he's here?
He brings power potential. He's going to strike out a lot. He's got a big swing, but when he connects, it does go. So we saw it last night. He went to the opposite field, planted one into the Rays bullpen. So I think that's going to be a good sign, too, the fact that he went on and got his first hit, his first home run out of the way in his second game, and now maybe we'll really be able to see what he has. I know talking to him after the game last night, I said, you were in the batter's box against, Chris Sale, so you pretty much got an idea of what the major league's best is like. I said, what did that do for you? And he said it kind of calmed me down because, kind of made him feel like, you know what, I can do this. So he hung around, and then he got the late dinger.
They could really use the boost to their offense, but Schaefer's a first baseman and a third baseman, and they're pretty set, it seems, at those two positions. Not that James Loney is perfect, and you could certainly see some at-bats against lefties there, but how much is Schaefer going to get to play?
Right now, it looks like he's going to feel – if they're in the midst of like a six-game stretch where they see a left-handed starter every time. So I think they're going to find a way to get him in there. Just like last night, he started at third base. Started Longoria at DH. So they could fill the whole lineup full of right-handers. So I do think he's only going to be used against left-handers for the time being unless he really, really is torrid. But I also do know that those are the only three positions I think we're likely to see him at, even though he has the kind of arm that profiles to be in a corner outfielder as well. Really strong arm.
The other interesting name that they brought in, and I thought this was a really nice buy low, even though he's not having a great year, even in AAA, never mind at the major league level, but Daniel Nava's been a guy who's shown real nice on-base ability over, at this point, a pretty decent sample of major league at-bats. It's, as we speak, it's not a done deal, but he seems like a guy who could really help this offense in the opposite way. Not a power guy, but a guy who could get on base. Do they see him as a fringe guy or maybe somebody that might step into a semi-regular role?
Well, all we can do right now is speculate on it because they're not talking about it, but from watching up in the press box and what I see, you almost wonder if the rotation is down at four right now. You almost wonder if they could end up getting Nava, such as a switch hitter. Then you have, maybe you replace Joey Butler and Sizemore with, one guy replaces two. But that remains to be seen. I don't know, if they do sign him and announce it after today's game, maybe we'll have a little more clarity on that for who they move out of the picture. But I think he certainly can help the Rays offense. Is not set at a, does not have a high bar. I mean, it doesn't take a lot to stand out in that group. So pretty savvy move for the front office, I think.
Yeah, and the other part of this that stands out is that, this team is two games out of a wild card spot. I mean, the Blue Jays and Orioles both made some moves. The Blue Jays obviously were extremely aggressive. The Orioles made some moves as well. But we get through the trade deadline, and they didn't blow it up. And they're adding some interesting pieces to fix what's wrong. And again, they're right in the hunt for this thing. I mean, do you see them being active? active in the waiver market, waiver trade market, to try and continue tinkering to take advantage of this opportunity?
Oh, yeah, I definitely do. That's always been their, their kind of their trademark. One thing I would like to add about that whole trade deadline thing, though, is, I understand Rays fans saying, they got rid of DeJesus, they got rid of Jepson, and didn't do anything. And, you could probably paint a compelling argument that way, but I thought probably the one biggest thing they've done to show that they really are interested in winning this year was sending down Matt Moore, because, they could have kept running him out there every 5 days when he's, you just don't know what you have right now with him. But to me, that showed a great deal more interest in wanting to win games, having to make that difficult decision to to option one of these big pieces for your future and have him work it out in the minor leagues instead of in meaningful major league games. So I thought that was a very positive sign. And who knows, maybe they can find a piece to – I think they will miss Jepson. It was a real nice situation where you had Jepson, McGee, then Boxberger. Maybe they can find some piece that they would like to, slip in there for that. I mean, the way these guys spot guys, just like Xavier Cedeño, the job he's done has been incredible. So I usually give them a pretty good bonus as far as looking for, reliefs and relief pitchers in the aftermarket.
Brian, Michael Pineda had been scuffling a bit before he was shut down. He was placed on the DL without much timetable listed, and now they're saying a month, and really not even saying a month exactly, just saying it certainly won't be any sooner than that. What exactly is your understanding of what the time frame is that we're looking at here, more specifically than that, and just how worrisome is this situation?
Well, I think what the good part is for the Yankees is you're not talking about surgery at this point. It's pretty similar to what Andrew Miller had. They liken it to that injury, and if you remember, roll the clock back, Miller missed about a month. Now, what the difference is that Pineda's going to have to build up to be a starting pitcher again. Miller could come back, and they knew he only had to throw 25, 30 pitches, and he could jump back into the closer role, and he did so, and there was no real carryover effect. I think that you watch Andrew Miller now, and you don't really have any second thoughts about that injury. So I think that Pineda should be able to come back and be healthy, but the question is when, and I think what Brian Cashman has said is definitely not August. The intent is to see him sometime on the mound in September. Miller took 4 weeks. I think with Pineda, you're probably looking at 5 or 6. The only difference is here, rosters will have expanded by September 1st, so you could theoretically bring him back and build him up at the big league level if you wanted to. You'd have the relief pitching to do that. And as long as he could go out there and conceivably give you 5 innings, 75, 80 pitches, something like that, he could be back on a big league mound, I think. So if I had to guess, I would say it's probably the second week of September, and then the way things are looking right now, that'll be right in time to help them for the push for the division.
He, as I mentioned, had a couple of rough starts before he went on the DL. 4 runs in 6 innings is certainly not a disaster, and then 5 runs in 5 2/3. Is there some thought that maybe he was feeling something before he was actually shut down?
I think it's possible. He didn't complain of anything until after throwing a bullpen at Yankee Stadium, but these guys, they want to have the ball, so, and they're used to pitching at less than 100%. I don't think anybody's really 100% except the first day of spring training anyway. They've got aches and pains and things like that. But the difference is, and Michael was asked this question, do you understand the difference between pain and discomfort? And the Yankees asked him that question. He said he did. And so guys pitch through discomfort all the time. I think that he was probably smart in this case to say, I feel something, I need to take a break, because you don't want to have the worst-case scenario where you're undergoing the knife. And this is obviously a guy who the Yankees have waited a long time to get on the mound. He finally seemed to be on a healthy roll, and it's just kind of one thing after another with Michael Pineda in New York. When he's healthy, he's been dominant, but unfortunately he's been on the DL a lot too.
The Yankee Brain Trust has said some really interesting stuff, I think, about Severino as he steps into that spot, and essentially said, not only is he going to get a couple of starts here now, not only is this Pineda is out, but our plan all along has been that this guy would come up and stay up, and this is essentially right on track with the sort of optimistic viewpoint that they had back in the spring. What has he, I mean, the performance is obvious, but what has he shown over the course of this minor league season that has made them that confident that this guy is now part of the Yankee rotation, full stop?
It's pretty impressive, and I, at 21 years old, Pineda's going to be the youngest pitcher to make his debut this season. So that tells you the Yankees really fast-tracked this guy. They believe in him. They did manage his innings so he could come up and conceivably contribute in August and September, and that's clearly what they're trying to do here. But you talk to people in the Yankee organization, and the one word they keep bringing up is fearless. They think this guy is not going to be intimidated by the big moment, by the idea of coming in triple-deck stadium and facing a division rival, and that's obviously what's going to happen at Yankee Stadium. And look, he's going to continue to get these shots. He's in the rotation. The Pineda injury is a convenient reason to bring him up, but I think sooner or later they were going to bring him up anyway, and he's going to get the ball every 5 days. That's what Brian Cashman said. He said, look, even if he doesn't have his great stuff the first time out, he's going to get a second time and a third time and a fourth time. He's coming up to help the team, and they weren't going to promote this kid to have him pitch out of the bullpen and get out of rhythm or anything. They want him to be a starter at the big league level, and it's time to see what the Yankees have.
Some of those minor league numbers are pretty eye-popping. The guy has allowed 8 home runs in 320 minor league innings, 4-1 strikeout to walk. These are definitely numbers you like to see. What sort of pitcher does he profile to be, with the acknowledgement that nobody really knows what anybody's going to turn out to be, especially a pitcher? What's the idea? What's the sort of floor, ceiling? I mean, what we hear really great prospect, and there's some really good numbers. What, from people you talk to, what do they expect Severino to be, both in the short and the long term, as a big league pitcher?
I hate to do this because I'm setting the bar so high, but and when you ask people for big league comparisons, they're hesitant to do it for the exact same reason as what I'm going to tell you. But the one that keeps coming up is a young Pedro Martinez. Now, I know that is setting the bar crazy high, and Pedro back, and Dodgers, Expos, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if Severino is going to be that. I don't want to put that out there, but I guess I just did. You asked me the kind of pitcher that this is going to be. I think it could be that. It could be anywhere in between, but there's a reason he's the Yankees' number one prospect. There's a reason he's ranked among the best pitching prospects in the game. Signed for $225,000. This could wind up being a huge bargain for the Yankees, and he's a piece that they're counting on. Brian Cashman did not want to part with him at the trade deadline. A lot of teams came calling for him. Him, along with Aaron Judge, Greg Bird, Jorge Mateo. These could be the new core four. It could not be. It may not win. Prospects are suspects until they make it, but they believe in this one, and they're excited to see what Luis Severino has to offer.
So to compare him to somebody like Aaron Nola, for example, who I think consensus is very high floor. This guy is a very safe bet to be a good big league pitcher, but maybe doesn't have that elite top-end potential. There is at least the notion that Severino has number one potential in him?
That's what I've heard, and we'll see where it lands. I think you don't know until you put it on the big league stage and see what you have, but he's 21. You've got to love the ceiling here. There's so much room to grow. Maybe it doesn't all click. Maybe it's not this magic potion that kind of just arrives and helps out the rotation this year, but I think in next year and years to come, this is the guy we're going to be talking about in the Yankee rotation.
Britt, since the last time we talked, the Orioles did make a pretty interesting move. They brought in Gerardo Parra, a nice fit in a lot of ways. What exactly made him the guy that they identified as the right outfielder for them?
Well, you know, a few things. One, they like the fact that he has full glove defense. He's got a full glove in right field and left field, which is pretty impressive. And two, obviously, he's having a career year at the plate. So they felt like they wanted to get some more production out of those outfield spots. Obviously, the corner outfield spots. And Parra just was a good fit. They kept waiting for the Brewers' price to come down. You know, reportedly, they wanted 3 or 4 prospects. In the end, it only took one. And he's been in real well so far. He's a guy who wants to win, very friendly, very outgoing. It's been a pretty seamless transition for him, and he's played well.
Yeah, they obviously have a center fielder, and he's, I mean, I'm of the opinion any center fielder can, as they say, play all three, but does it provide any kind of a hit to his value that he's not playing in center, or do they just figure having a Gold Glove center fielder and a Gold Glove corner guy is entirely worth it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a hit to his value. Maybe it is because he's a free agent at the end of the year. I guess probably have to talk to his agent a little bit to see how that affects things. But people know he's capable of playing center field. People certainly know that he's an excellent outfielder no matter where you put him. So in that regard, I don't think it hurts him too much because you look at how good he's doing offensively. And again, the Orioles want to keep him next year. I mean, they're going to try to have some conversations to keep this guy around. Him and his agent have already made it clear they're open to staying in Baltimore. So at the end of the day, if he stays with Baltimore, I guess it doesn't really hurt his value at all. They know how important he is to the team, and they know how his skills can really affect their team.
It in fact, almost certainly is too early to ask, but you brought it up, and so I want to follow up on this. Now, Parra's an interesting player because for most of his career, he's been a guy you would consider a good player. As you know, very good defender, not a bad hitter, but not a star hitter, certainly a guy that is a useful major league regular. But he is hitting like a star this year and is having about as good a walk year as you can have. As the O's look at him in the long term, and again, I preface this by saying I know we don't necessarily even know who will be making this decision, depending on what happens with Dan Duquette. But
right.
Do they view him as a guy that is somebody you really make a significant commitment to, or do they view him as a guy that, yeah, we'd like to have him, but this is not make or break if we don't make this work?
Probably the latter. I don't know if they want to make it. They haven't really shown a willingness to show too much significant commitment to anyone outside of J.J. Hardy and Adam Jones. So I don't know if he's the guy you want to go all in with. I think Manny Machado continues to have the year that he's having. Perhaps he's the guy you want to sit down and talk to and maybe buy out some of his arbitration years and make sure that he's around for a long time. But they like Parra. But you've seen with this club, especially this last winter, and Nelson Cruz and Nick Markakis, they have a limit. And I would expect that if things get out of hand, they would, again, kind of back off and say, you know what, it's all right. We can find some internal solutions that might not be as good, but probably a little more cost-effective.
Gregor, when last we talked, we thought we already knew the big move that the Blue Jays had made before the trade deadline, and we were wrong. First of all, just how did this come together, the Jays bringing in David Price, an absolutely enormous acquisition that clearly is already showing up not only in the results but in the stands?
Yeah, you know, it really kind of – what changed was that Detroit made him available. And Dombrowski, when he was still around, had given clues to Anthopoulos that Price might not be available. Anthopoulos was under the impression that he wasn't going to be available. And so after, you know, the deal for Tulowitzki, Anthopoulos actually told – Daniel Norris that he wouldn't be going anywhere because he didn't see anyone out there that would be, worthy of giving up a guy like Norris. And then, that changed just, a few days, two, 3 days before the trade deadline when Dombrowski and the Tigers decided that they were going to be selling. And after that, it seemed like things moved relatively quickly. It happened all basically within the span of about 12 hours. You know, it was a phone call placed from Dombrowski to Anthopoulos, Wednesday afternoon, and then they kind of exchanged some messages later on that night, and then there was a couple of late-night phone calls and a deal that got wrapped up around 3 a.m. So, you know, we often see trades that take days and days and weeks to develop, but this one really came together really quickly. It seemed like the Tigers knew exactly what they wanted, and it seemed like Anthopoulos, who wasn't willing to deal Norris to anybody else really for anything out there, made an exception in this case for David Price because, in his mind, he's that much of a difference maker that it almost didn't matter what the Blue Jays were giving up. They were willing to pay the price to acquire a guy like that.
Do you think they would have done this same deal? Did they try to do this same deal or a very similar one for Cueto, or was Price just absolutely unique?
No, I think Price is unique, and there's a lot of, they were in on Cueto for sure. I don't think they were prepared to part with Norris for Cueto as a rental player, and I think they just view Price as really the guy you don't have any concerns about whatsoever. I mean, there was that talk a little earlier this year about Cueto and his elbow, and Cueto's results speak for themselves, and he's an elite pitcher as well, but David Price is probably, a little bit higher. And there's a lot of factors at play that the Blue Jays don't have to worry about. I mean, they've seen this guy in the American League, in the American League East. He's used to going into these ballparks that the Blue Jays are going to be going down the stretch. He's used to those lineups. You know, it's a really easy transition for Price to make, especially because he made the transition last year too a little bit, you know, but switching teams, and he's kind of been through that change of scenery before. They have all the confidence in the world that this guy isn't going to need any time at all. He, as we saw in his first start for the Blue Jays, he hit the ground running, and that's what they expect, over these final 2 months.
This is almost certainly, for both club and player, a matter for November and not August, but it has to be asked. Do they think they have any shot, or do they think they'll even make a serious effort to keep him long-term?
As we sit here today, no. This is being viewed strictly as a rental player. However, there are some things that could change over these next couple of months. One factor to keep in mind is the Blue Jays do have a very strict policy of not going beyond 5 years on contracts, but that's a policy from Paul Beeston. So Paul Beeston is going to be leaving at the end of the year, and it's possible the five-year max contract will go out the window with him. But to me, the bigger factor here really depends on how these next 2 months go. I think that there is a potential that if the Blue Jays end up making a run, end up getting into the postseason, and end up winning, a round or two, it's possible that they could put an awful lot of pressure on ownership to make a major financial commitment to try and keep this core together. Money's not an issue for the Blue Jays. I mean, they're owned by a multi-billion-dollar corporation. But what they always have to do is when they go present things to the board, they need some tangible evidence that, money invested in the team there's going to be a return on that investment, and that's something the Blue Jays have had trouble doing in the past. They have a very healthy, very competitive payroll, but they could go to the upper echelon of the league, really, if they had a team where they're packing the Rogers Center over the final month and a half. We've seen a spike in attendance already, and then if you carry that over into some additional revenue from the postseason, I think there's a chance that there could be some pressure put on ownership to do something. But it's a little too early to know for sure. A lot of that's going to depend on how this team does and how many people end up showing up to watch this team play.
That was not even – those two huge moves were not even the only moves they made. This team did a lot of things and really, basically, it seems to me, looked at every weakness and did something to address it. They addressed the fact that they haven't really had the left fielder they expected to have, and they addressed their bullpen issues. How does Benavir just step in? Is he the left fielder now? Is that kind of how that works, or how exactly does he fit in?
Yeah, and that was really kind of a change even after they acquired him. When they acquired him, Anthopoulos came out and Gibbons came out, and the expectation was Revere was going to start in left field against right-handers, and Danny Valencia was going to start against lefties, and that's something we've seen before. And I think after the dust settled a little bit, it was really Gibbons' call. And Gibbons, has seen far too many times this year where the Blue Jays have had issues coming up with routine plays in left field. They've had, seemingly infielders playing the outfield all year long. And there have been some times when it's backfired on them. And I think that, Gibbons looked at this team and said, if we're actually going to be competitive and actually take a serious run, then those little mistakes that continuously popped up have to be eliminated. And so I think they're going with the defense first with Revere. They do like what he can do a little bit against lefties. The splits aren't that kind this year, but last year they were pretty friendly. So they're okay with him against left-handers. He's not going to hit for any kind of power at all, but they're going to take the speed and defense, and it gives the lineup a little bit of a different look than what it had before. And now that position, probably more than any other, was a luxury more than anything else to upgrade. I think that was the last thing on the list. And then once the Blue Jays addressed a bunch of other different issues, there's still a few hours before that trade deadline, and gave it one last shot and got that little cherry on top this Sunday.
In a pretty intriguing debut from Henry Owens, the results were not spectacular, but I think there was a lot to like. What did you see from him?
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty good. He lacked his command, obviously, in the first inning. And that's, somewhat to be understood. First career inning at Yankee Stadium, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of butterflies there. But after that, he really settled into a nice rhythm. And retired 12 in a row there against a very dangerous Yankees lineup, as we've all seen this year. So I thought there was a lot to like from Owens last night. Look forward to seeing him again and, later this week.
He has really come on lately in the minors. He wasn't off to the most spectacular start to the season, and it really came on lately. I know you spend your time in Boston and not Pawtucket, but based on who you've talked to, what is it that has sort of come together for him recently that's helped lead to this promotion?
Yeah, I think it's mainly just command. I saw him even in spring training, and he was having a lot of trouble, commanding the fastball, and sometimes he'd get a little too happy with the off-speed stuff, as a lot of younger pitchers do, and the more they go through AAA, they realize that, look, fastball command sets everything else up, and I think he's starting to realize that. I don't know if he's quite a finished product yet, but I think their hope is that, by the end of the season, when they come to spring training next year, he'll be ready to really compete for a spot in that rotation in 2016.
How open-ended is this opportunity right now? Because there are a lot of guys trying to make an impression in that Red Sox rotation.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely some room for Owens right now, especially, Brian Johnson's got a little bit of a elbow issue right now, so they're going to quiet him down for a little bit. So I think they're just going to let Owens go out and pitch here for a while. I'm sure they're going to be careful with, whatever innings limit they've, established for him this year, they're going to be careful not to go over that. But, I fully expect Owens is going to get, anywhere from 3 to 5 starts for the Red Sox, at least coming down the stretch here.
And because you're a pro, you set up my next question. What exactly is going on with Brian Johnson?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's anything too serious. They saw some irritation in the ulnar nerve. Anytime you hear something like that, you got to be a little worried. But, talked to Ben Cherington the other day, and he didn't sense any ligament damage. He called this, a benign injury, and, doesn't think it's anything that's going to require surgery. They're going to give it a conservative rehab, so I think it's just one of the things. You just got to be careful that he doesn't do anything to make it worse. But they think that he's going to be okay.
So it is a little bit – there's a lot of moving parts and some guys available and some not. Is that going to open an opportunity for somebody else? Does that maybe prolong Wright's stay in the rotation? How does that kind of work itself out in the rotation?
Yeah, I mean, right now you figure with there are a lot of moving parts. You got Porcello out right now. You have Buchholz out for a while. So there's some opportunities. So, I think Steven Wright's going to get a chance to pitch. Joe Kelly might kind of continue to keep getting chances by default here. He continues not to be very impressive, although you see that bullpen and the way that bullpen pitched against the Yankees the other night. And it just seems to me to be screaming for a guy like Joe Kelly to come in and maybe lend some stability to that, the 6th or 7th inning going in front of Taz and Koji. So, I'm curious to see how these parts kind of come together over the next few weeks.
You mentioned Porcello. Triceps is often a very scary word. A lot of times when you hear triceps, it's not that long before you're hearing elbow. How high is the worry meter on Porcello right now?
Yeah, I don't think it's all that high. I think that they think that this is just kind of a little maintenance thing they have to get through. And, obviously the way he threw the ball in his last start was a little concerning because he was just, every pitch was like right in the middle of the plate. I mean, I know he's had some bad starts this year, but that one was by far the worst. So they just, they want to cool it off. And I don't get the sense that they think it's a major injury. They're hoping that it's just one of those things that pops up over the course of the season.
This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks for listening.